All right, Tana, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Oh, okay, perfect. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. It's 8 o'clock. Want to welcome everybody out to the coaching call today. Just give me one second here. Let me go ahead and mute the line. Let's see here.
Hello? Hello?
I think Cody's working on something.
Okay.
Oh, it should be just a minute. I just texted Cody to figure out what's taking him so long, guys. Sorry for the wait.
Tana, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
You couldn't hear me before?
No, I heard you the very first time.
Holy smokes, I've been rambling nonstop for 8 minutes about the whole spiel here, and I thought everybody could hear me. I'm sorry.
No, you said I'll be right back, so we've all been waiting. And
oh, bless your heart. I apologize, everybody. I've been running my mouth. I thought everybody could hear me for some reason. Here, hang on here just a second. Let me figure out why this isn't letting me do it. All right, we're almost – let's try this one more time. You know probably what happened. Oh, I know exactly what happened. When I entered this in, I came in as a panelist, not as an organizer, so when I muted myself and not everybody else. Okay, well, I'm in as a panelist. Not a problem. We can do this. Okay. So everybody can hear me now, right?
Yes.
Okay. So here's what we'll do then. For the sake of you being able to hear me, just try and limit the background noise that you guys have. So let's get into this real quick. I'll start over again, and we'll get this thing rolling. So I apologize. Okay, so welcome everybody to the FinalExpenseSuperstarter.com. We've got our training call today. Want to welcome everybody out. If you have any questions or anything like that, don't hesitate to give me a holler. You can also text me. That's probably the easiest way. And that is you can text me at area code 208-351-0579. And what that's going to do is you can text me over your questions and we can address them as we go on. So today we're going to cover the number one reason that an agent doesn't make the sale, or what I believe to be the number one reason an agent doesn't make the sale. And so, you know, you've got your leads, you've paid good money for them, you've got the work ethic, you're out there making it happen, and you get in, you sit down, the person, you feel like they need what you have, they're asking questions, and for whatever reason, they just don't pull the trigger when you want them to. And so the number one reason that I believe this happens is not because of leads, it's not because of work ethic, although that's often the case, but I believe it to be because agents don't accurately establish the need for the product. They don't help that person realize why it is that they need what it is that you're selling. And so this is easy to do. I mean, we've all found ourselves in this situation where we go in, we knock on the house, and we ask them a question like, okay, do you have any type of final expense coverage, life insurance, anything like that? They say, oh, yeah, I've got $100,000 of whole life. And you're thinking, oh, piece of crap. You're thinking, what am I going to do with this guy? He's got $100,000 of whole life. For sure that's enough for a funeral. That's enough to have some left over. What am I doing here? This is stupid. You know, it's crappy leads. That's the first thing we think is crappy leads. And so what happens, I've noticed a lot of times, is we have to get past that, look past it, and offer the information that we can give them to help persuade them. Now, it's not going to work every time, but it will work the largest percentage of the time that it is going to work. And we're going to cover all of those things here in the next 20 minutes or a half an hour. That way, this week, as you go out and you're talking to people, the focus should be establishing the need, helping them recognize why they need what it is that you have. So in this call, we're going to talk about how to do that when somebody has $100,000 of life insurance, how to do that when they already have the funeral paid for, when they have 50 grand in the bank. We're going to cover all that stuff. And so what kind of sparked this whole thing here was a sale that I got this week. It was a decent-sized sale. You know, it was probably $700 in premium. So it was a pretty good-sized, sale. And I'm going through this neighborhood, and the area I'm working right now is it's in a little town in Idaho called Meridian. And there's two sides of it. There's the super wealthy part, which is, you know, kind of sandwiches the not so wealthy part. The north part's wealthy, the southern part's wealthy, and right in the middle's the perfect area for what I'm trying to do. And so I love this zip code because you get enough business out of that sandwich section, out of that meat section in the middle, that it makes it worth it, all the junk that you get at the north and the south, because those areas are just, you know, a little bit outside of our market. You know, they're, you know, higher income, younger families, just not quite what we're looking for. But in order to get to those in the middle, I got to drop the whole thing, unfortunately. So, and hopefully with your demographics, like we learned last week, when we screen our demographics and we use the numbers that, you know, that we use when we do our lead orders, that should help eliminate some of those wealthy people too. But I'm in the southern part of Meridian and I'm driving around. I got this lead and I'm driving out to her house to my GPS. And I start, and I take a right into this neighborhood, and I'm thinking, piece of junk. I'm like, these houses are huge. They got to be $500,000 each on 2 acres, you know, of land, beautifully landscaped, you know, big, nice gated, you know, yards and the whole thing. And I'm thinking, piece of junk, what a waste. What a sucky, crappy lead I just got. That's what I'm thinking. Even though I know better, I still think that. So I pull up to this house, and they've got a nice, beautiful black Cadillac in the driveway. And, you know, my rule is if they were dumb enough or negligent enough to mail the card in, they're at least going to have to kick me off their doorstep, because I spent $25 for this thing, and they're going to have to at least kick me, you know, send me away, because I'm not just going to pay for it and, you know, just throw it in the trash. That, and in addition to that, a lot of times I'll get the sale. So you never know. I do the same thing in every house. I, you know, for the most part. And so this house was no different. I park my car on the street. I walk up the long driveway past the beautiful black cherried Cadillac, brand new, and I knock on the door. And I say, Gladys, it's Cody. You mailed that card in. I'm here to explain it. It takes about 10 minutes or so. And she kind of gives me the runaround. She's like, well, you know, what is it? And I say, oh, it's that, you know, give her my whole spiel. And she's not letting me in. She's not warming up. It's freezing cold outside. I'm not wearing a coat. And I'm kind of going through the things. So through the process of about 5-10 minutes, I work my way into the door. And backing up, I had to give her a quote on the doorstep because she wouldn't even let me in. So I'm trying to, like, sell her. I'm just trying to push it. She's showing some buying signs. I just kind of indulge her, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe this will work. Probably not, but maybe. So I go through the whole thing, and I give her the prices, and I use my clothes. I say, which one of those, you know, you feel like would work best for the budget? And then she says, oh, well, I'd probably do the $5,000 if I was. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah. And so we sit there and we talk a little bit more, and I was real timid on the clothes because I thought, did she just tell me yes? I don't know if she told me yes. So I go in, and I say, you know, it takes about 10 minutes to do this. Is that all right? She goes, oh, sure, come on in. So I'm thinking, holy smokes, I can't believe this worked. So I go in. Turns out she was the mother of the people who lived there. She was just living with her daughter, very low income. Her kids helped out a little bit. And so I go in and I sit down. And what was interesting, though, about this whole situation is when I asked her, you know, do you have any type of final expense program, you know, burial policy, life insurance, anything like that? She goes, yeah, I do. And I go, well, you know, what kind and how much coverage do you have? And she said, well, I've got a couple policies. You know, I've got one for $15,000, and then I've had for years. And then she said the other one is $5,000. I've had that for, you know, probably 5-6 years. And so I'm thinking, 20,000 coverage. I mean, that's a pretty significant amount for somebody who's on a low income, even though she lived in a nice big house. So I go through and I still tackled it how I do in every house. You still build the need. And so when you guys are there, and guys and gals, when you're there talking to them, no matter how much insurance they have, you have three options, okay? Option is one, assume it's not a sale. Pack up your stuff and leave. Okay, that's your first option, which is what most agents do, and it's foolish because you're leaving money on the table. So the first thing is you pack up your stuff and you leave. All right? You don't want to do that. Now that you've got two other options, which are the best. You try to add to what they already have, or if appropriate, I'll say it with that caveat, you can sometimes save them some money or provide them with better service or replace what it is that they already have. Now there are several things in there that you have to be careful with when you're replacing business. You have to make sure it's in the best interest of the customer and it's not solely to generate a commission. So when you go onto the Final Expense Superstar training site, and you guys, if you're on the coaching call, you have access to that. So if you don't have access, let me know. I can get you access to it. But those are your three options: pack up and leave, add to what they already have, or replace what they already have. You're not going to pack up and leave, so kick that one out of the list. You don't have that option. One, because you paid $25 for the lead, you're going to at least go through it, and you will make sales. The next one is add to what they already have, which is always going to be your best option. But sometimes you have to go the second route, which is if what you have is better and is going to significantly make their life better, then there's nothing wrong with replacing that policy, okay, as long as you don't screw anybody else out of anything, meaning your previous managers or the companies. You don't want to, do bad replacements. You just got to be careful with it, okay? All right. So let's focus on the main thing, which is adding to what they already have. All right. So in order to add to what they already have, you have to establish, okay, exactly what it is that they have. So with Gladys, she had $15,000 regular life insurance she's had for years. She's paying next to nothing for it. Then she had $5,000 of another policy, which she's paying a little bit for. So she had $20,000 total. Now, I didn't want to replace it because this policy had been in place for years. Both of them had been in place for years, and it would not have been beneficial for her. Had she purchased it in the last year or two, I probably could have, done her something great. But that wasn't my option. I couldn't replace it. And because I didn't have anything better. She was already covered, with a 2-year contestability over. It just didn't make sense. So I said, okay, I've got to add to what she already has. So when you add to what they have, I'm going to pull up on the website what it is that let's see here. I'm looking on the website. I just want to look at a couple of the things so it's structured. So we're talking about the same thing. Okay. All right. So the first thing you want to think about is when you're increasing, when somebody passes away, it's expensive and it's not very much fun. Typically, most of the medical bills that somebody has occur within the last 6 months of their life. A lot of times they go into nursing homes or in-home health cares, things like that. And so all that stuff costs money. And a lot of times the senior feels obligated to make sure that when they pass away, they're not leaving any of those expenses to a spouse or to their kids or anybody else. And so here are a few things that you can use to help somebody realize how expensive end-of-life expenses are. They've got medical bills, okay, like we just talked about. They've got utility bills. If somebody passes away halfway through the month, okay, and they've got, half a month's worth of rent, they got half a month's worth of cable, they got half a month's worth of light and gas or, storage costs, people have monthly bills that they're spending money on. And if they pass away halfway through the month, those bills still have to be paid. And so the less money that the kids have to take out of the regular life insurance to pay back bills, the better off they're going to be. You've also got car payments. If somebody lives, house payments. If somebody lives in a house and the kids are going to end up selling that house or they have to get it re-rented, it takes time and it costs money to get the house ready to sell or ready to rent. They might have taxes come up. And so, and all these things, everybody, they're legitimate. These things happen every single day. And I think the longer that you do this business, which some of you have been in for years, but if you're new, the longer that you're in this business, the more that you'll realize that these are absolute legitimate concerns that people should have for when they pass away. Okay. You've got another option, which is like cleanup funds. If you have, it kind of runs into the rest of them. But if you've got, somebody who, with the house, getting the truck ready, anything like that, all that stuff takes time. It costs money. You've got income replacement. If you have a husband and wife and they're both collecting Social Security, let's say he's getting $1,200 a month and she's getting $800 a month, that's $2,000 combined income. But when the first of the two of them passes away, the survivor gets to keep the larger of the two Social Security checks. So if Gladys passes away, Tom, the survivor, is only going to get $1,200 of income every single month. but the expenses of the household, for the most part, stay about the same, with the exception of food. Food costs go down, but the expense to light the house, to heat the house, the rent is the same, insurance is the same, all that stuff still costs the same amount of money, but you've got half as much income coming into the house to use that with. And so that's another reason why people need more life insurance typically than what they usually have. It's not enough to have a $10,000 or $15,000 policy. Realistically, people need more because dying is expensive, okay? And if it's not expensive, let's say they don't have any of those things. Let's say they don't have, you know, any cleanup funds. Let's say they die at the first of the month. There's no bills, anything like that. They, you know, they die in their sleep, and there was no medical, no in-home health care. That's fine. But you still have the cost of the income replacement. You know, the person, the survivor, is still going to have a reduction of income, and they're going to need that to readjust, you know, that adjustment period to readjust to the new income. And not saying that that's going to happen in every case and you're not wishing it, but people just need to know that this could happen, and that's a reason why you could look at maybe adding just a little, not nothing crazy, you know, a little 5 or 10,000 to what they already have. And so those are just a few of the reasons or things that you can do to help increase, you know, the need. Just a couple more here. I'm just looking on the website to refresh my mind of other things. And it's funny too. I've noticed I forget sometimes that I say this stuff, and until I look at it, I remind myself, oh, I say that all the time. I forgot. Just depends on the situation. Anyways, also expenses for the family, taking time off of work. You know, when my grandfather was getting ready to pass away, it was quick, it was fast, and I had to take time off of work. The plane ticket was expensive, and everybody was visiting Grandpa, so I couldn't stay at Grandpa's house. You had the cost of the hotel, the food, all that stuff costs money. And so if somebody wants to leave a little bit behind, you know, to help cover some of those expenses, travel expenses of family members, it's another great idea. Sometimes people want to leave some behind for the kids. You know, sometimes if they've got a $7,000 or $10,000 policy, that just covers the expense of the mortuary, but they might also need something for the cemetery. Just trying to look at a couple reasons. Oh, okay, here's the last reason. If you've gone through all of that need building and they're still not doing it, they're still not agreeing with you, a lot of times it's best, in fact, all the time, this is what I say, I'll finish it. If I've gone through that whole thing and they still don't notice why they need the additional coverage, they're not listening to what I'm saying, I'll just say, okay, well, what was it about that card that made you want to send that in? And a lot of times they'll just say, oh, I just wanted some extra life insurance. I wanted my kids to go to Disneyland when I die. And it's like, oh, crap, I should have asked that in the beginning. So that's the end. That's the end all is what was it? You know, you don't want to start that at the beginning. Of course, you can. Then you could avoid it all. But, you know, it depends. Every situation is a little bit different. You're going to want to read it a little bit different. And the last thing I want to say about it is that you want to be careful not to give information overload. Just because you know all this stuff doesn't mean you need to tell it to them. Be selective with the things that you're talking about. Listen to what they're saying. Adjust this whole thing that I've just explained, taking 20 minutes to explain all this, adjust it for that person, to their needs. That way you're not vomiting all the information on them and they just get, you know, they don't listen to any of it. So that's it, guys. I want to keep that simple on the creation of the need. I don't want to cover really anything else on this call if we can, because this is that important. So what I'd like to do now is, if anybody has any questions, please feel free to ask. Maybe a situation you've run into this week that you felt like maybe what you said wasn't what you should have said, or if you have any questions or even insights. If you think you say something that helps people out, by all means, please share. Is there anybody who has something, a question or a comment they want to share?
Hey, Cody. This is Saeed. I have a question.
Great, Saeed. Thanks.
Okay. I think it's a great call today. I'm learning a lot. My question to you is that when you're establishing the need, do you build a need through questions, which is a form of a dialogue, or is it a monologue for you? And if you could give an example.
Okay. That's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both. The way that I like to sell is I like to ask all the questions in the beginning. I'm like a CIA agent. I'm trying to gather as much information as I possibly can. And with that information, that's what gives you the need that you need to talk about. So I'll spend, if I had to use percentages, I would say I spend probably 75% of the time asking questions. And then I would spend 25% of the time catering my answer based on the information that I gathered. So for an example, Saeed, did you run into a situation this week that you were asking about specifically?
No, I was just wondering in general. I mean, some people, I usually just ask them, what was it about the card, what motivated them. And sometimes, they do have a need, but, they'll say something along the lines of, I do have a need. I do understand that. But the problem is that I have some credit card bills to pay for the next 3 months. And
sure.
I've lost a sale in that situation. So
sure.
Maybe you can, do a reflection on that.
Okay. And I think, and that's, in my opinion, Saeed, that's a whole
mm-hmm.
different problem.
Okay.
Because in that case, the problem isn't establishing the need. They recognize the need. The problem is they can't afford what you've offered them, or you haven't
right.
shown them how to afford it, or why it's important to put this on the front burner instead of the back burner. So I think for the purposes of this call,
sure.
I think that's a whole extra. I think it's a whole extra thing. I think next week we should cover that. Let's cover next week what to do when somebody says they just can't afford it. Or did we cover that already? I can't remember. Did we cover that 2 weeks ago? Do you remember, Saeed?
We covered the just tell me the price. That was the one we covered.
Okay, just tell me the price. Maybe next week we'll cover what to do with somebody who just doesn't have any money. I think that's a good one. Let's do that. So next week we'll cover what to do when somebody doesn't have money. But how about you and I, if it's okay, Saeed, just to give an answer to this question and to see kind of how I do it, why don't we go through a little role play if that's all right? And
sure.
Saeed, we've never talked about this. And for everybody listening, we've never talked about this. I don't know what Saeed's going to say. This is literally off the cuff. This is what we would do. And I think it's important to recognize, too, a lot of time with sales, your responses, or they should always, not a lot of time, but always, your responses should be automatic. You should know what to say for the most part in every situation. And so let's go ahead, Saeed. Let's go through a little role play. So all right, I'll start it out, okay? Just when I'm talking about establishing the need, I'll say, okay, Saeed, do you have any type of final expense program, a burial policy, life insurance, anything like that set up for yourself?
Yeah, I don't have a burial policy, but I have a life insurance through Foresters of $10,000 approximately.
Okay. And so you've had that Foresters policy. Do you know what type of policy it is? Do you know, is it a term life? Is it a whole life?
Yeah, it's whole life. That's what I like. My premium will never increase.
Okay. So you like the whole life plans. And how long have you had that policy in place?
I just got it 2 years ago.
Okay. So you got about 2 years ago. Okay. Do you have that policy close by? We can take a look at it for a second.
Sure. One moment.
Okay.
Yep, here it is.
Okay. So on this policy, I think you've got a good thing going on for you. You've got a couple of different options. On this policy, you've had it for 2 years, which means you're outside your contestability period. That's a great place to be. And I think with that being the case, you have a fairly good, rate on this policy. You got it in before Foresters raised their rates. Here about a couple of years ago, they raised their rates on new coverage. But on the old coverage, they kept it all in place, and that hopefully will never increase, at least as far as we know. So that's Foresters. Now, is that – that life insurance policy, what was the purpose of you purchasing that plan?
Well, just in case, if I pass away, I want to make sure that there's no burden on the kids with a funeral and maybe leaving something extra behind for them. So that's what I thought.
Okay. So you got it just to cover, some funeral expenses and things like that.
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Well, and I think, $10,000 is a great place to be when you're talking about the cost of a funeral. If you passed away today, $10,000 would most likely be enough as long as you don't go crazy to take care of it, to take care of everything. As long as you don't get the gold-plated casket or the glass-lined vault $10,000 should be, you know, a fairly decent amount to cover just the funeral expenses. Saeed, if you don't mind me asking, what's your age right now?
I'm 72.
Okay, so you're 72, and your health, you got the Forester's plan, so your health is pretty good. Is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I go for my walk every day. I exercise. I eat healthy.
Okay, no major, like, health issues, anything like that?
No, I just take blood pressure and cholesterol medications. Other than that, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah, just like everybody else. I think everybody's on blood pressure and cholesterol. All right. Well, there's a couple things that I want to talk about here for just a second, Saeed. The first is right now you're only 72 years old. You've got a $10,000 plan. If you passed away today, it would be enough. However, statistically, if you live to be 65 years old without a heart attack or a stroke, your life expectancy is about 85 years old, 83, 85, someplace around there. So we've got to look in your situation, Saeed, of the probability of you sticking around for another good 10, 15, you know, 20 years, which would be great. Hopefully we all make it that long. And so I think with this plan, you've got a $10,000 plan now, but as time goes on, the cost of a funeral is going to increase. You know, every couple of years or so, they're going to increase. In fact, every year, they go up by about 3% every year. So you have to look, okay, in about 20 years, they're going to be about double, you know, what you're paying right now. In 10 years, they're going to be about 50% more, someplace close to that. So that's the first thing, Saeed. Now, the second thing is when you're talking about final expenses, it's more than just what you pay to the funeral home. You've got all the other stuff that comes with it. You've got the estate planning. You've got cleanup funds. You've got bill paying. You've got income replacement. Do you own your house here, Saeed?
No, I pay rent over here.
Okay, so you rent. And like most people, and so where you rent, you have to think too, okay, if I pass away halfway through the month, I might have some bills, might have some utilities, things like that. And so I think $10,000 is a good start, Saeed, but I don't think it would be terrible to add maybe an extra $5,000 or $10,000 to what you already have. And the reason why is because it's enough today, but you're healthy, so the chances of it being enough 10 years from now are not good. Because your health is good, you will most likely live a long time. Of course, we never know, but you have to plan for that future. So I'd recommend nothing crazy, Saeed. Maybe add a little extra $5,000 or $10,000 to what you already have, just in case you live long enough to, you know, to have funeral expenses that increase that dramatically, or if nothing else, just to cover any unexpected expenses that may or may not be there. So Saeed, you had mentioned your health's doing pretty good, correct?
Yeah, it's doing pretty good.
Okay,
before you move
it.
Any forward, one question I have, one thing I want to know from you. Right now, I'm thinking I want to get a traditional funeral, but what if I change my mind and I want to go with cremation? Do you think $10,000 would be enough?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And that's the thing, Saeed, is if you decided to do a cremation, $10,000 is going to be more than enough. So what I typically say is, that's what's nice about these plans is if you have the $10,000 plan or a $15,000 or a $20,000 plan and you decide that you want to go the cremation route, you can always do that. And then if there are any other bills, you've got that much left over. Of course, it doesn't hurt to leave any left behind for the kids as well. But yeah, that's what's nice about these plans is that they are flexible. If you decide you want to do the cremation, you can always do the cremation route. If you decide you don't, you can always do the funeral route. And a lot of times too, Saeed, it doesn't matter what you decide, it matters what the family wants. So a lot of times they'll just say, ugh, you know, let's do the funeral, that's how we want to do it. So it's you need to have, or you should have enough at least to cover a funeral no matter what, so that if the kids decide last minute that's what they want, that's what they can do.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And so that's, okay, so end of script, end of role play. That's pretty much what I would say, Saeed. And from there, I would just go on to the qualification questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're looking at time, as you can see, I spent the first part of that conversation talking about, you know, asking questions, gathering information. The second part, which was probably 40% of the conversation, was just a little, you know, my dialogue of what I would say. Now, had you said different things in the beginning, I would have tailored my part to match what you said. So if you would have mentioned the kids and the family and, you know, I want to leave a little bit left behind, I would have completely changed that whole tail end. I would have used different things from the training to establish the need using that.
Cody, when you ask, I know in part of the presentation you always ask them that, do you have a burial plan? Is it a good idea to ask them, do you have a burial or cremation plan? Like, you only have that option there? Some people, there's a lot of people I'm running into that just want to be cremated.
Oh, yeah, sure. And I guess for me, in my mind, they're interchangeable. Even though they're not, but in my mind, I think they are. So that's why I only say burial. Yeah, when I ask that question, I want to discover every thing that they have that they're going to use to pay for life insurance, prepaid funeral, prepaid cremation, plots, headstones, you know, $10,000 in a shoe sock or in a sock or a shoebox. I want to know everything that it is that they have. And the reason that's important is because when I go into the need creation side, I need that information in order to tailor my response in creating the need. Because if you miss something, you know, let's say, for example, they've got, you know, a $5,000 plan and you're recommending an extra $5,000 or $10,000 of coverage just for any of the extra expenses. And they say, oh, I forgot to tell you, I have an extra $10,000, you know, in the bank. Then you're totally screwed. I mean, you're doing a little bit of backpedaling trying to get that going. And so I want to discover everything that they have before I start helping them recognize the need. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Now, Cody, one more thing I want to ask you is, while creating the need, sometimes, you know, I go and ask people the same question if they already have some kind of life insurance or something in place, and they're very closed off. In fact, I think one lady even told me that's none of her business.
Yeah.
In that situation, what's your behavior like, or is it like something before I even said it, or people are like very closed off, they just don't want to share their personal information at all.
Yeah.
I was wondering, is this, what to do there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been doing this since 2006. I have asked that question literally thousands of times, and I've only had one lady say, that's none of your business. Now, let's prep for that situation. Let's say you ask them and they say, Saeed, that's none of your business. I don't feel comfortable telling you that. At that point, I just explain why I asked. Okay, the one time that it happened, I was brand new. I'd only been in the business maybe 3 or 4 months. I was brand new. She goes, that's none of your business. And I go, I apologize. I did not mean to overstep my bounds there. The only reason I asked that question is because it helps me know what kind of a recommendation I can give on what we're offering. You know, I kind of humble myself, take a step back and say, I apologize. I did not mean to overstep my, you know, my bounds there. Only reason I asked that question is because, you know, so I know how I can help you best. Something like that.
Okay.
So that's
you wouldn't ask the question, right? You would change the topic after you apologize.
I'm trying to think. Like I said, Saeed, it's only happened once, so I'm trying to think what I would even do in that situation. Of course, I would read what they were telling me. I have had people who have not shared, but they've never flat out told me it's none of my business, except for that one time. I would say to reading them, if they're aggressive about it, if they're like, "Oh, I'm not telling you that." You know, if they're kind of jerks about it, then I would say move on and just deal with what you have. If they just say, oh, you know, I don't really know if I feel comfortable saying that. You know, if it's
right.
Like more like that, then I'll explain why I'm asking, and then I might just return back to the question. And I apologize. It helps me know. I mean, you feel uncomfortable doing that? And they say, yeah, I don't want to say it. Then I would just move on.
Okay.
But to avoid that from happening, it's all in how you ask the question. Okay. The first is you want to be assumptive and you want to be indirect. So I'll say there's a reason why I say, you know, do you have any type of final expense program, you know, burial policy, life insurance, anything like that to help pay for the, you know, final expenses? And so I'll say it just like that every time. That's how I say it, Saeed. I don't vary in my tones or anything. That's how I say it every time. And then if they say, yeah, I've got a couple of plans, you know, I got a couple life insurance policies, well, then you have to follow up. Then you say, okay, well, you know, did you do that through a mortuary or did you do it through a funeral home? Or excuse me, a funeral home or did you do it through a life insurance policy? You say, oh, I did it through life insurance policy. Okay. Do you remember how long ago you did that? Was that, you know, maybe 2-3 years ago? Yeah, it was 2-3 years ago. Do you remember what company you did it with? Yeah, I did it with Foresters. If you don't mind me asking, how much coverage did you pick up when you did that? I picked up $10,000. Okay, not bad. $10,000 is a great place to start. If you don't mind me asking, what do you pay per month on it? you know, just out of curiosity, what are they charging you per month? So I think with that, Saeed, I don't flat out ask them, you know, what do you pay per month on your insurance policy? Because that's very abrasive. It's very upfront. I try to use a series of questions to help narrow it down, to help them get comfortable progressively with giving me information that is fairly private. And then eventually I get the information out. I just do it in a lot of little steps. That's the first thing. And then I also ask it in indirect ways. Did you kind of see how I did that?
Yeah. Cody, thank you so much. I mean, I'm feeling bad. I mean, I'm the only one talking to you right now. So thank you for answering my questions.
Hey, you're welcome. I appreciate it. Is there anybody else who has any other questions or comments, concerns? It's a good thing Saeed was talking. All right. Any other questions, Saeed, that you have?
Yeah, one question I have, I don't know if this could be related to today's topic or not, but one question I had in my mind was that when you're interacting with the client, like I've heard some salespeople give me an example. They'll say, I can sell anything to anyone as long as they're willing to listen.
Uh-huh.
So how do you establish that when you're creating the need that they should be, that you're someone who's worth, you know, sharing that information with? Is it just with your body language, your tonality, likability, all those things? Do you want to shed any light on that? Like, you're somebody who's worth, you know, their time.
Yeah.
Like, and their attention.
Sure. I can't remember. I think Franklin Covey came out with a book called The Speed of Trust. And so I think, and I've never read the book. His writing is a little bit flowery for me, so he's not my favorite author, but he wrote a book called The Speed of Trust. And so I've thought about that concept of the speed of trust. How quickly is somebody to trust me? And for myself, the way that I establish the quickest speed of trust possible is in how I look, how I act, and how I talk. So my hair is always short. I am always clean pressed. I'm always shaven. I don't, that's for me. Now, other people do it differently, but I'm just talking about for myself. This is what I do. And the speed of trust works well with that in combination, and probably even more important, how you present yourself. So I think last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about acting presidential. I act presidential. I stand up tall. I'm the president of my company, and I'm here replying with your request, things like that. And when I talk, I talk with them. I don't talk at them, but I'm not submissive either. I think it's a delicate balance between the two. And so I'm approachable, but not submissive, if that makes sense. And I think when you're practicing your tones and when you're talking to people, that's kind of how you have to come across, is authoritative but not pompous. And I also – lovingly bold is the way that I talk about it too. You know, lovingly bold, where you can – if people think that you care about them genuinely, you can pretty much say whatever you want and they're not going to get offended by it because they know that you love them or that you have their best interest at heart. Did that answer your question, Saeed?
Yeah, the last lovingly bold, that's wonderful, awesome.
Yeah, so I mean, because it's different if I say, you know, if I'm talking to an agent who's not selling insurance, and I know why, I know it's because he's lazy or he has call reluctance or something like that, and I say, you know, Tom, look, man, I'm trying to help you, but you are being really, really lazy right now. I go, we have got to pick it up. We've got to get it going, man, so you can start making some money doing this. Why do this if you're not going to make money? You know, and so there's such a different side between saying it that way and saying, you freaking bonehead. I mean, what are you doing? You're not working. You're not doing this. You know, you're saying the same thing, but one is backed with love and kindness and a genuine interest in helping them, and the other one is backed with authority and boastfulness, which doesn't get you really anywhere. Mm-hmm. So... And so just take that whole concept and transfer it to your customers.
Sure. There's just one tip I have. Maybe it might be useful for other agents out there. There's something which was very helpful to me this week. It was actually during a appointment setting over the phone. And I just thought I'll share this with you guys. But quite often when we make phone calls to make an appointment, people always respond by saying that, I thought you would send something in the mail. And I just realized it's because, you know, they have a fear of, like, meeting with a salesperson face-to-face. And when that person told me that, I was being very, very polite, you know, with that person, and I even, like, assured him. I think I said something along the lines of, you know, I assure you, if I cannot offer you a plan which is suitable for your family, you have no obligation to buy anything from me. And I think I made him feel very comfortable. And in the end, I made the biggest sale of my, you know, at least this year.
Oh, my gosh, fantastic. I think, and that, yeah, that's great. I mean, anything that you can do to help them feel more comfortable, or maybe take, you know, when they, I call it the closing window. Okay, so whether you're on the phone and trying to set the appointment, when you're talking to them initially, they have up their barriers, okay? They've got their windows closed so that you can't talk to them. But if you can try and do things like you just said to help get them to maybe lower the window just a little bit to where you can just maybe talk to them through the crack of the window, and then as they get more comfortable, maybe they'll roll it down all the way so that you can talk to them and you can say, okay, how about tomorrow? I think it's great, Saeed. Great job.
Thank you.
Great job. All right. Well, thank you, Saeed, for the questions, and everybody else, you're once again being bashful. So if you have any questions down the road, don't hesitate to give me a holler. And like I said, guys, I apologize for not for that first 8 minutes of complete silence. Hopefully we didn't lose half of the crew with that. So anyways, this is recorded. So if you want to go back and listen to it, I'm going to shoot you out a link here in the next couple of minutes so that you can get it. And I hope that I didn't screw it up by not recording it. Of course, we had a little bit of technical difficulties, and that's to be expected. So anyways, well, thank you very much, everybody. Have a great week. Make it happen. Create that need and work hard. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.